And then they have to go, you know, it's a cat and mouse game, just to get water to farm. So every family here, you're just struggling daily. You know, and the police and the army are obviously on the side of the settlers. What he was saying was ironic, that usually when you get attacked by somebody, you call the police and they come and arrest the attacker and protect you. Here, if he gets attacked by the settlers, the army comes and harasses Atta. You know, and so they might say to the settlers, go home, but they're certainly not going to arrest him. They even, like we said, they burned his house, they destroyed part of his house, and walked away through the army, through the police that were all here. So there's no legal protection or actual physical protection for Palestinians.
And this Israeli army officer just said, you know, we don't just cooperate with the settlers, we are the settlers.
That's right. Well, they are the settlers. I mean, the settlers are here because they're not illegal. They're here. I mean, they're illegal, but they're here because the Israeli government settled them here. The Israeli government is what took the land, built the settlements. So the job of the police is to protect the Israeli citizens, which means settlers. Palestinians fall under the army. So the Israeli police don't have anything to do with the Palestinians, really. And the army, of course, is just concerned with security.
And the settlers are the indigenous people. The Palestinians are aliens, sort of, in the minds of Israel and the settlers.
They consider the Arabs. We don't talk about Palestinians in Israel, because to say the word Palestinian gives too much legitimization to a national identity that Israel denies. Israel claims there's only one people that this country belongs to, and that's the Jews. And Arabs are here, but they're intruders. And they should go live in one of the other dozens of Arab states. You know, that's the line. Because this is our country, and we're taking it back. That's the line of the government. The Palestinians here can't expect very much protection.
Learn more about Atta Jaber and his struggle against Israeli dispossession at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe. With your help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Into Israel's assault on Gaza, widely described as genocidal by legal scholars, a position deemed plausible by the International Court of Justice, a top UN committee has just weighed in on the whole sorry affair. The Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, including East Jerusalem and Israel, it's called, more simply, the PLA Commission, after its chair, South African jurist Navi Pillay. Established in May 2021, the Pillay Commission has issued a handful of reports and a host of press releases. This past June 12th, it delivered its most recent report to the Human Rights Council in Geneva. It did not mince its words. Israeli authorities, Pillay told the council, are responsible for the war crimes of starvation as a method of warfare, murder, intentionally directing attacks against civilians and civilian objects, forcible transfer, sexual violence and torture, and the crimes against humanity of extermination, gender persecution, murder, forcible transfer, and torture. Hamas and six other Palestinian armed groups have committed plenty of war crimes themselves, Pillay went on. The commission's assessment of Hamas's October 7th attack and Israel's response are contained in a 21-page report to the council and a pair of detailed companion reports. Here's Navi Pillay speaking to the Human Rights Council 2 weeks ago.
International law has strict and clear regulations on the conduct of war and the conduct of self-defense, a fundamental principle of international law which underscored our findings is that unlawful action by one party to an armed conflict does not justify unlawful action by another party. Israel has a right to protect its citizens from violence by Palestinian armed groups, but in doing so, it must comply with international law. Hamas and the Palestinian armed group must also comply with international law. In relation to Israel's military operations and attacks in Gaza from 7th October, we conclude that Israeli authorities are responsible for war crimes, crimes against humanity, and violations of international humanitarian and human rights law, including extermination, intentionally directing attacks against civilians and civilian objects, murder or willful killing, using starvation as a method of war, forcible transfer, gender persecution targeting Palestinian men and boys, sexual and gender-based violence amounting to torture and cruel or inhuman treatment. Israel's total siege of the Gaza Strip has weaponized the provision of life-sustaining necessities for strategic and political gains, including through cutting off supplies of water, food, electricity, fuel, and other essential supplies, including humanitarian assistance. It constitutes collective punishment, disproportionately impacting pregnant women and persons with disabilities, and is causing grave harm to children, including starvation-related deaths. We found that the immense numbers of civilian casualties in Gaza and widespread destruction of civilian objects and infrastructure were the inevitable result of an intentional strategy to cause maximum damage, disregarding the legal obligations of distinction, proportionality, and adequate precautions. Israel also forcibly transferred almost the entire population into small enclosures that are unsafe and uninhabitable. The deliberate use of heavy weapons with large destructive capacity in densely populated areas constitutes an intentional and direct attack on the civilian population. Although Israeli officials have repeatedly stated that their operations in Gaza are intended to destroy Hamas and to release hostages, yet neither of these aims has been largely achieved at the expense of thousands of lives. We found that Israeli forces committed sexual and gender-based violence with the intent to humiliate and further subordinate the Palestinian community. Palestinian women were targeted and subjected to sexual violence and harassment online and in person. Men and boys experienced specific persecutory acts, including sexual and gender-based violence, amounting to torture and inhuman and cruel treatment. The Commission concluded that specific forms of sexual and gender-based violence constitute part of Israeli security forces' operating procedures. Excellencies, the situation in the Gaza Strip has overshadowed that in the West Bank, where Palestinian fatalities recorded since 7th October have exceeded any other recorded period. This is linked to increasingly militarized Israeli operations, a trend which we highlighted in our report to the General Assembly last year, as well as a surge in violent settler attacks on Palestinian communities, often assisted or condoned by Israeli forces. The blatant disregard for international law across the entire occupied Palestinian territory has disproportionately impacted Palestinian children. In Gaza, Israeli security forces have killed and maimed tens of thousands of children and thousands more likely remain under the rubble. Israeli attacks have also severely impacted infrastructure essential for the well-being of children, including hospitals, schools, and basic services. Excellencies, in relation to the attack of 7th October 2023 in Israel, the Commission found that Hamas and other Palestinian armed groups are responsible for the war crimes of intentionally directing attacks against civilians, of murder or willful killing, torture, inhuman or cruel treatment, destroying or seizing the property of an adversary, and outrages upon personal dignity and taking hostages. Members of Hamas, members of Palestinian armed groups, and some Palestinian civilians deliberately killed, injured, tortured, took hostages, including children, and committed sexual and gender-based violence against civilians and members of the Israeli security forces, some of whom were hors de combat. Children were killed, injured, and physically and emotionally mistreated and instrumentalized by attackers for propaganda purposes. The Commission identified patterns indicative of sexual violence and concluded that these were not isolated but perpetrated in similar ways in several locations by Palestinian perpetrators, primarily against Israeli women. I must note that the exploitation of sexual violence in conflict by all parties for political propaganda risks diverting attention from the experience and from the needs of the survivors, as well as further fueling long-standing hostility. Excellency, the Security Council passed a resolution last week calling for an immediate, full, and complete ceasefire. The Commission reiterates that call and calls for a complete cessation of hostilities. We call for the immediate and for the full end of the siege, for the release of all detainees, including all of the Israeli hostages, and for Palestinian armed groups to stop the indiscriminate firing of rockets into Israel. The Commission reminds all parties that they must adhere fully to international humanitarian law and international human rights law in protecting civilians and civilian objects. The attacks against UN agencies and humanitarian actors must stop. This Commission will continue its investigations into all crimes under international law with the aim of achieving justice and accountability. The Commission requested Israel to ensure the Commission's immediate access to the Gaza Strip in order to investigate and preserve evidence. And we asked for this in compliance with the order issued by the International Court of Justice on the 24th May, specifically ordering access to this commission. Israel has ignored the request that we have submitted to them. The commission welcomes and is cooperating with accountability processes in the International Court of Justice and in the International Criminal Court. It calls on all states to support those processes in every possible way. The Commission welcomes a listing of all parties to conflict in the 2023 Secretary General's report on children and armed conflict for committing grave child rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territory and Israel. We call on the listed parties to immediately end all the grave violations against children, and in cooperation with the UN, adopt time-bound commitment to end and prevent grave violations against children. In conclusion, our world faces the biggest threat of impunity for violations of international law unless perpetrators are held to account and justice is delivered for all victims. The protection and promotion of human rights remains a paramount obligation of all member states. Thank you, Mr. President.
Navi Pillay, chair of the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, including East Jerusalem and Israel, speaking to the Human Rights Council in Geneva on June 12th. Read more about Navi Pillay and the Commission of Inquiry she chairs and link to the Commission's June 10th report and companion documents at greenplanetmonitor.net. As Israel's genocidal assault on Gaza unfolds, drawing attention away from Europe's bloodiest conflict since World War II, thoughts turn to the First World War, the one that was supposed to end all wars. On August 4, 1914, almost 110 years ago, Germany invaded little Belgium. 3 weeks later, in an orgy of destruction, German troops laid 7 Belgian towns to waste. The martyr cities, they came to be called. Leuven in French, was one of them. Of all the acts committed by German troops in Leuven in August 1914, none sparked more international outrage than the destruction of Leuven University's library, a treasure trove of European literature and art, torched by the Germans on the night of August 25th. 1914. Here's a story I produced on the 100th anniversary of that dreadful event, an event elderly residents of Leuven remember.
Ah, yes, I have pictures, if you like.
Marie-Thérèse Delcombe sits at an outdoor cafe in the Belgian town of Leuven, rustling through faded family photos from the First World War.
This woman is my grandmother, and that's my mother. And their house was completely destroyed in 14.
Marie-Thérèse is old enough to recall her grandfather's story of being placed in a line and every third man shot by German soldiers in the opening days of World War I, 100 years ago.
A priest said, "I can take your place because you are married and you have a child." And the priest was shot. And so my grandfather was saved.
Marie-Thérèse's faded photos are a graphic reminder of the horrors World War I inflicted here in Belgium. Leuven was one of 7 so-called martyr cities laid to waste by invading German troops between August 23rd and 27th, 1914. Together with the nearby towns of Dendermonde and Aarschot, Leuven is poised to commemorate those events. Caroline Helmans works with Leuven's tourist office.
Many people know the story of Flanders Fields, but not many people know the story of those martyr cities. Great battlefields, the trenches, that's what people think of when they think of 1914. But they don't think of the martyr cities. Most of them don't think of it. And we want to get to people to know that story. And then, of course, we also want people to think of what it must have been like. What if it would happen now?
Helmans and her colleagues have organized a 5-day program of cultural events that will kick off on August 23rd. Among them, a performance of this new composition by Flemish artist Piet Swerts, entitled The Sack of Leuven. For those who enjoy a history-packed tour, guides like Guido Klassen will be on hand to explain how and where the Sack of Leuven began a century ago.
The shooting started at the railway station and then 4 days of plundering, looting, terror,
and the whole city went up in flames.
Guido Claassen was trained as an electrical engineer. The 74-year-old retiree is also a history buff. He takes me to where the University of Leuven's 14th-century university library once stood, destroyed by German troops on the night of August 25th, 1914.
These are the people that have been shot here, and you see there are two with the cross. This one and that one are two priests of that college. And one of those men, he saw that the Germans wanted to set fire, and he came to the German soldier and said, "You know what you do? This is the famous library of the old University of Leuven." And he has pushed them away and said, "Befehl is befehl," and he set fire. And so all the books of this library, very old library of the university, 300,000 books, incunabula, manuscripts, everything was gone.
Of all the acts committed by German troops here in Leuven in August 1914, none sparked as much outrage as the destruction of the university library, home to one of Europe's finest collections of books from the humanist, Reformation, and Enlightenment periods, including priceless incunabula, books printed in the decades following Gutenberg's invention of the printing press.
850 incunabula were destroyed and 1,000 manuscripts. And between 230,000 and 300,000 volumes of books.
Mark Deretz is an archivist at today's university library. On a tour of the magnificent Gothic building towering over Leuven's main square, Deretz shows me all that remains of the original collection.
These are charred books, carbonized books, charred books, packed in small glass boxes.
Among the precious holdings destroyed in the flames, the university's 15th century charter and an original copy of Andreas Vesalius's monumental work on human anatomy, replete with exquisite drawings of the human skeleton and musculature. Thankfully, some gems were out on loan when German troops arrived.
An original handwritten by Erasmus himself, not by a secretary, but there is a signature. Erasmus Rotterdamensis manu propria. Written with his own hand, yeah.
So here we are going up the tower. The destruction of Leuven's university library was hotly discussed in the late summer of World War I, when German troops shelled Reims Cathedral in France and destroyed the medieval Draper's Hall in Ypres. Germany's reputation as the leader of European science and culture was in ruins.
Ici finit la culture allemande.
Yeah. This was a kind of inscription, and it appeared on the university hall after the war, of course, when the Germans had left the town. And since the destruction of the library, Germany was labeled not as the Kultur, as a cultured nation, but as a nation of barbarians, of savages, of the Huns.
The Bosch.
Did German leaders order their troops to destroy Leuven's university library? This question would be debated for years.
Was it collateral damage? Have they set fire to the town and also to the library? Or was it a wanton destruction, a deliberate act of cultural vandalism? So up to now, I'm convinced that it was a deliberate act of vandalism. But we don't have a real proof in documents. There is no, what they called in the Second World War, there is no Führerbefehl to find in the archives. So we have only a kind of moral conviction, and we have only a kind of anecdotal evidence, but not the evidence of a written document with the order set fire to the library because it's the library of the Pfaffenuniversität. There was a strong Protestant and anti-Roman Catholic feeling amongst the troops, the German troops, which came from the northern provinces, which came from the northern part of Germany, the Protestant part of. It's a very difficult question.
C'est le grand-père de papa qui a été pris par les soldats en otage.
For Marie-Thérèse Delcombe, sitting at a crowded café in tourist-packed Leuven, the events of 100 years ago are more than academic.
Alors il a été devant l'hôpital Saint-Pierre, il a dû faire sa tombe.
She shows me a photo of her great-grandfather digging his own grave, armed German soldiers standing at his side.
It's horrible. It's a horror, the war. In the First World, there was 15 million people dead in all the world. And that, I hope, is an example to them, but the war continues. In the world.
Will this week's commemoration in Leuven and Belgium's other martyr cities help foster a culture of peace? Marie-Thérèse isn't so sure.
To respect the people who died and all the things, but it's very touristic. I don't know. And young people don't know about it. It's only the old people remember.
For more information about the sack of Leuven, go to greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. Wherever or however you're listening, reading, or watching, please help us make the GPM happen. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. By the way, you've heard this before, I'll say it again. The guy behind this guitar is Dan Weisenberger. Thanks for your great, great instrumental themes, Dan. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started, so I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.